There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Very happy to have you all along. Next couple hours, you and I hanging out. Phone number and the text line, they're both, so the telephone call and the text use the same numbers, 343-0106. 343-0106 gets you through. And a reminder, too, if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can always use that to leave us a TalkBack message, lets you record your voice, emails it to the show. We can play it back here on the show as well. And if you don't have the app yet, it's free and waiting for you. You get a couple free minutes today or maybe over the weekend. If you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store. If you are an Android user, go to Google Play. But both places look for FMTALK, number one, number zero, number six, number five. And then you'll see our logo. Don't put a point between the six and five. So FM Talk 106.5. You'll see our logo there. That's our app. It's free. Download it and enjoy it. Does all kind of good stuff out there. All right. And a lot to do on today's show. And I want to open up here with good to get this man on the show. And I guess it's, you know, well, we'll see for the, which is this the first or second spring break coming up in the legislature? We're talking to Alabama State Senator, District 22, Senator Greg Albritton joining us now. Senator, thanks for your time.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Hey, do we get what y'all got? I'm always amused by this. And yes, do I start trouble? Of course I do, Senator. Y'all get two spring breaks? How did that work out?
It's going to come to a major stop here. April's going to be a difficult month, I'll tell you that. Everyone has different spring breaks with different families through the state, and we're trying to accommodate everybody in that regard. We're a family-friendly legislature.
But, and looking at that, is there any kind of tell on a given year, bills that come up, things that are done before the first of the spring breaks versus the end, you know, that like, do you say it's this kind of bill is going to have a better chance of getting done before the break than another kind, or is it just different every year?
Well, yes, there is attempts at strategizing every year, and earlier on we start trying to strategize, but, it's like any other battle. As soon as the first shot rings out, it all falls apart, and we start over. And that's about where we are now. We had a plan on what we were going to be doing, and circumstances and other things have interfered, and it looks like we may be getting backed up some.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And, of course, part of this is in my brain, the pacing for the restructuring of ADVA. That was, a committee day one of the legislature. And here it is. Y'all in the Senate voted on it, I guess, last week, and the House voting on it yesterday. You were a yes vote, right, in the Senate?
That is correct. After we got a few amendments to it, I voted to approve it and move it along.
I'll point out to y'all that the senator also a veteran here, so two reasons to be talking about his opinion on this. Why the yes vote once those changes? What changes were important for you to have made before you were a yes vote? And why were you a yes vote when I hear from so many, at least down in our neck of the woods, that are veterans that were no's?
Yeah, it's an interesting developments there. The vet community, frankly, is split. In what to do about this. And there's concern and worry about what will happen and if it happens and that type of thing. What I don't know at this point is whether we're going to have to go to conference. If I don't know if the House bill was the exact bill that we passed out of the Senate or not. And if it isn't, we've got to go to conference and start all over, basically.
Are those changes, could be there, I mean, semantic changes or in the, because one of the things I've been focused on is just how you have the head of the ADVA, right? And this Governor Ivey said in her State of the State address in so many words that that person need to be a team player with the executive branch. And that, I mean, that's been one of my worries, but is there, is that couldn't change in conference, right? Is other things or what tweaks would happen?
Well, a conference committee has a wide range of opportunity there, okay? And there can be, again, they've got whatever comes out of the conference, it's got to be approved by both bodies again. That's why I say we may be, I won't say starting over, but it's going to be difficult to do again.
I mean, so this could go back in a conference committee and not just be like, hey, they said it would start on a Thursday and it might start on a Friday or whatever. I'm trying to, you know, come up with some kind of smaller thing. It could go back and change really with the essence of it. They could come back and say.
It could. Okay. Certainly. Yeah. And now keep in mind, I have not looked at the engrossed version. Last evening, I didn't have that in hand. It passed so late. So I've got to find out if we're even going to be having a conference committee or not. But I suspect there will be.
The split you talk about with veterans groups, that split, I mean, is it just over the whole bill? Is it over how you put the head of the ADVA? Because, you know, the idea was that, I guess for me, since 1940, watching this from the outside, but from 1940 on, this has really not been a political body, right? I mean, it's for veterans and not about who's in the governor's mansion. That's one of the things that just continues to bother me about it.
Well, I'll tell you this. The it is a political body, regardless of who makes the appointments and whatever. It is a political body. It has to function in its political role in the political framework of the state.
Maybe that is partisan, then. It's a political machine, but it has not been partisan, I guess, in the past.
Correct. I would agree with that. But the split, one thing I can tell you is everyone, at least that I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of folks, everyone is in agreement that this needs to be a cabinet-level position. That needs to be a cabinet-level position so that they actually have a voice in state government, that they have the ear of the governor.
Being a,
right
okay,
now,
so help. Okay, go ahead.
Sure. Right now, it is not at that level. It is almost outside. It's more like the state school board, which is outside the realm of the executive and the legislative, and it's functioning on its own. And when you're out there like that, and you're a small body like the vets now are, it's difficult to get the ear. It's difficult to get the resources. It's difficult to get the attention. And that's one reason why we have so many nonprofits out there that's proliferating, that's doing things for vets, because the government is not providing the services.
Right. And we have these, you know, we talk about the big VA and the federal level, and then where the, you know, these smaller groups fill in. Here in Southwest Alabama, I know many of them, but I know they're around the state where they try to fill in the gaps. I guess my worry is looking at this and going, okay, so you elevate it to a cabinet position. You get more attention, but that attention is going to be the chief executive, right? And so depending on the opinion of the chief executive, there goes the director of ADVA, right? That could change with every election, gubernatorial election cycle.
Well, of course it can. I mean, that's how anything goes. That is correct. That's not unusual for us. I think the concern of where the vets fall in on that, I think you used the word nonpartisan.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure we have that now. And that has never risen to the forefront previously, because, and I don't know why, 40 years ago was a little prior to my time in this, but all I can tell you in that regard is it is better to be on at the table where the negotiating, when the pie is being split, than to be not in the room. And that's where the vets are now. They're not in the room. They're not at the cabinet level position. They're not in the daily discussions. They're not involved with the emphasis or the discussions with monies and such. They're relying on another agency to stand in for them very often. That needs to stop. We need to have them at the table.
Just joining us, talking to Senator Greg Allbritton. I want to switch gears to a subject I heard you talking about with Jeff earlier in the week. And I went, holy cow, I haven't talked about this in months. What's wrong with me? And that's prison builds in Alabama. You know, I want to talk about what's happening in your district and here in Southwest Alabama. But where are we on the first prison build and then the money we found to build the second? Can you kind of bring us up to date?
Sure, be happy to. The first prison is well on its way. It is a structure that's on more than 200 acres. It has something, a total of something like 50 buildings. It has a hospital on it. It has a school campus on it. And it has many, many more individualized cells for further control. And it's huge. 4,000 inmates is where what we're planning on having in that. It should be finished. It should be finished within the year, I think, is when it's scheduled. And then we'll start putting inmates there and trying to relieve some of the pressures that we have in the older facilities.
Now, is that one going to be a swap, Senator? Like, because I want to talk about down here, but is that facility going to just absorb another facility's entire people, or is it going to be, how many additional beds do we get out of that, I guess?
We're not putting any additional beds in at all. None. These are simply replacement beds for those that we have lost or are losing. You know, we've shut down most of Holman. Holman used to house 900 more inmates. We're down to about 230 now. Because the rest of it can't be maintained. That was done a few years ago. Kilby is also limited and shut down. And there's several others that are functioning on a limited basis. So the number of beds that we have been declining. The number of inmates are increasing.
I was not a math major at the University of Alabama, Senator, but that seems like we will have a problem again then going forward.
Well, these two prisons will not cure all the problems, but it will make it so that we have more infrastructure, state infrastructure, that we can control the inmates. Right now, most of our prisons that are functioning are dormitories. We have a dorm with 100 men in it. Now, keep in mind, all of these men are convicted felons, and about 90% of them are convicted felons that have already taken a life, a human life. So these are not friendly people. They have very little to lose, okay? And so if you're a prison guard, and you have one prison guard, and he is tasked to go into that dormitory, and there's a total of maybe at the whole facility, and this may be an exaggeration, but less than a dozen COs spread throughout the facility, and you're tasked to walk into this den of 100 murderers, how comfortable are you with that? Because remember, he's unarmed.
Most of the inmates
aren't. So what the new prisons are doing is putting the singular cells or two-man cells so that we can have much greater control on the inmates and also safety, not just for the inmates, but for the COs that work there so that they can go home at night.
Yeah, absolutely. So back down here in our neck of the woods, same thing. We're going to be just having a better system, not to have the dormitory housing. What do you hear on the construction plans for in Atmore?
We're getting those done. In fact, we're going to copy the same system that we got in Elmore, so we don't have to go through the full process of making the plans, okay? Now, there's more, you know, architects, they have their proprietary things that we got to deal with, but it's going to be with the same footprint, the same layout, the same everything. It's going to be on 200 acres. It's going to be brand new. It's not refurbishing anything, and it's going to be less we're not going to have a full hospital there. We'll have some medical care there. We won't have a full dorm, campus there, but we will have training conducted there. So it'll be a step down from those aspects. But as far as the 4,000-man prison, that's what it will be. We finish those out, that'll give us 8,000 beds, replacement beds, which will make up for those that were lost and those that are in dormitories to a large extent. Now, we'll still be having some of them, but that'll give us a means to shift and push people around for their own safety and for the CO safety.
Then when these plans, which you said generally, I like the idea, we're going to use the same plans that were previously drawn. That's good. Let's save money there. Timeline.
And both of them, Sean, are being built on already owned property. It's already state property.
Yeah, that, and I know. I mean, I don't know the Kilby situation up there in Etowah County, but I do know what it looks like here at home, you know, near Atmore, and you got some space there to expand. The timeline on the build down here, do they give you an idea? Like, I know it's you're still waiting on plans, but any idea when that might be finished?
Well, I'm more concerned with when we're going to get started right now. okay.
Good point. You can't get to one until you get to the other.
And that gets down to funding, all right? Now, I don't know how I can bore folks to tears on this, and I'm going to do my best to do that. So bear with me, okay?
Okay, all right.
When we started this process, we were told that to build two prisons were going to cost $785 million for two prisons. Sounded like a good deal. So
yeah,
we authorized.
It didn't work out.
No, it didn't. Yeah. we had two stops. Number one is, we had the borrowing authority to borrow $785 million. So when we got started, we went out to bid for the bonds. Guess what? We had the Les Wingers guided and did this on an international basis. We had riots in London, riots in New York. I think we had them in Chicago complaining and rioting because Alabama was going to borrow money to build prisons.
That's wild.
That affected the market to the extent. It was quite a lot of number of little phone calls going up and down the road at that time. But we did get 500 million sold. That's it.
So half.
So, yeah, we got half of that. Now, couple that with the point that those numbers were off. Those estimates were incorrect. Not only did we run into COVID and inflation and all the problems that ensued, which anybody that tried to build a house or anything else can understand that. We were stuck then with numbers that just do not fit what we agreed to do. So what we did is...
Senator, can you hold on? Run the music. I got to go to the break. Can you hold on during the quick news break and we come right back?
Sure, I'll have more data when you get back.
All right, good deal. We'll come right back with Senator Albright.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Just a couple minutes left here with Senator Albritton, and we're talking about the money for these prison builds. Senator, we kind of talked about getting this project started, but yeah, the money to fund this. Yeah, we got the Senator Albritton, the money to fund this. Where's this second bunch coming from?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. You know, we started out with the 500 mil that we borrowed. We also took 400 mil out of ARPA money, which we were authorized to do. And then we started looking into, I'd like to call it sofa cushions and car ashtrays for the change and a little laying around here and there. And we did our typical things, spend less than we got, be careful with what we have, and apply the monies and the resources where we need them. So right now what we have is we have the full price for the Elmore prison. That turned out to be $1.086 billion, okay?
Okay.
So we have the money for that. Plus we have got another $600 million to apply toward the Escambia facility. Well, clearly that's not going to be enough. We don't know exactly. We haven't got the numbers.
Million short, right? I mean, if we compare the prices to build them being
that's
similar.
That's approximate, right? Yeah, there's different numbers floating around, estimates that's there. Some from as low as 250 to about 350, something around there. Okay.
Okay.
So what we've done is we brought a bill in. It's through the Senate. It's through House Committee. Hopefully it'll be on the floor next time we come up.
Okay.
That's going to give us additional borrowing power to finish that out.
Okay, so that's going to come up, and we'll get you back on the show then to talk more about it.
Yep, okay.
Hey, Senator Albritton, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for your patience with me.
No problem. There he goes, Senator Albritton, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile next.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so welcome back. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Hey, by the way, too, we're just a week out. We'll be at the Mobile Boat Show starting a week from today. We'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Guides Corner again this year, and your chance not only to win cool FM Talk 106.5 logoed gear, like those cool buckets we have with the rope handles and the throw handle on the bottom and all that good stuff, an EPIRB. You know, we talk about that on the Outdoor Show a bunch, that technology that it saves a lot of lives. People out in the Gulf, the boat sinks, they get knocked. The EPIRB is a way to be tracked there. From your GPS coordinates, even with a boat or a person with a life jacket or somebody holding onto a cooler that's drifting with the current, the EPIRB lets the Coast Guard find you. Really a great piece of equipment, and we'll be giving one of those away at the boat show as well. More details coming up. This is good. I think we have on the line Admiral Kent Davis joining us to talk more about what happened with the vote that the House took yesterday. And where we are with this ADVA restructuring bill. Senator Albritton talked about it. Admiral Davis, good to have you back on the show. We talked to our friend and common Sergeant Sergeant Major Battaglia this morning about this. Your reaction to the vote and your reaction to what the senator said.
Yeah, hey, thanks so much. It's great to join you again. It's been a little while. So, listen, I love Senator Greg Albritton. He's a good man, fellow naval officer. But I disagree with him on this, and some of the things he said I just think are wrong. I mean, first of all, with this bill, and he has said this, everybody knows this bill would not have happened except for what happened in the fall with the governor trying to get even. This is about control. He said that in an interview in the fall, that this is about her getting even, and she's on this kick. So I want to get that out of the way, the motivations for this bill starting out. He said a few things that I would like to correct about the need for the commissioner and the department to be a cabinet-level agency. Lost in all of this is the fact that the governor, for 80 years, has chaired the State Board of Veterans Affairs. This governor has never bothered to show up and substantively chair a meeting. She proved that she could even appoint a proxy to do that and has never done that. So that's not the issue. The department could have had the governor's ear and voice for a long time if that power had been exercised in the past, and it just hadn't. Also, the notion about how important it is to be a cabinet-level agency instead of an independent agency. There are 21 independent agencies in Alabama. This is not unusual at all, and it's usually reserved for those departments that you want to be independent. You don't want that political influence. It's things like public health. My gosh, over the last few years, if there were ever an argument for more political control, but that didn't happen last year. They were kept an independent agency. Pardons and paroles, the personnel department, the retirement systems of Alabama, those are all independent agencies along with 21 total that don't sit on the cabinet. But a lot of those don't have the added benefit of the governor chairing the oversight boards and appointing all of the members to the oversight board. So there is a lot of political control over Veterans Affairs in the past. Another notion is this need to have more power over the spending of Veterans Affairs. There's not a lot of discretionary spending in Veterans Affairs. About half of the Veterans Affairs budget comes from the federal government. It's very formulaic. It's based on the number of residents in state veterans homes, the number of burials in the cemeteries. Only about 1% of the state budget for, or the total budget for Veterans Affairs comes from the general fund. So there's very few political decisions that play into running Veterans Affairs. But there was also this notion that the nonprofits are having to pick up the slack, as it was characterized, for veteran services. Well, there's a reason for that. Those are very specialized services. One of the examples is right in Mobile, Vets Recover, that does both inpatient and outpatient mental health services for veterans. The Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs is not equipped for that. And look, we're in this notion now that we want to divest things from government control. I think it's a valid argument to say the best services are provided by the private sector, and now we're suddenly in the mode with Republicans of we want the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs to take over more of those services. I don't think that's a good thing. So I have a hard time with some of the things that were said and the premises that were established in that conversation. I just disagree respectfully with what was said, and I thought it was important to say that on air.
Well, and I appreciate that. And Admiral, you know, we've had several conversations about this, and I keep coming back to this one. And I know there are, it's multifaceted. You made good points. But the, and maybe I said political, and the senator said, well, it's always been political. Let me just make it nonpartisan. The fact that the fate of Alabama's veterans or the programs for Alabama's veterans could change depending on each gubernatorial election. That's the one that sticks with me. That bothers me. I think it shouldn't be. I understand there's cabinet positions that are the spoils of war, politically, yeah, out there. But the fate of the veterans, or what, you know, our overall policy is for veterans, I don't want to see that changing every time there's a new governor.
That's right, and I've seen it in other states that have gone this path of politicizing that position in the department. And I'm telling you, it does not work well. There's little consistency because not only every time a governor changes, you have a new commissioner or director coming in, but if there's a disagreement with the governor, boom, that director or commissioner is gone. There's a lot of turnover. It's very political. Be careful what you ask for, too. The states that I've seen the most problematic issues are tend to be the Democratic, more liberal states, where there is definitely a political agenda and pushing those agenda items. With, when it comes to veterans, much like with the military, you do not want it to be partisan or political. That is the one area in this country, when it comes to national security, taking care of veterans, that we've always said that should be nonpartisan, apolitical. It works well. And for 80 years, it has worked well. I have yet to hear anybody with specificity say, what is the problem we're trying to solve here? I keep hearing from people, this seems to be a solution in search of a problem. Veterans were happy with the services that the State Department of Veterans Affairs were providing. Those services were expanding. A new state veterans home, 12 new veteran service offices, IT improvements, partnerships with those nonprofits that didn't exist before. And in a system of synergy, those nonprofits were starting to work together to fill in the gaps. Ironically, the complaints that I always hear from veterans, and this causes confusion, those complaints are about the federal VA, which ironically is run by politicos and non-veterans.
Yes.
So the successful model, the State Department of Veterans Affairs, clearly run in nonpartisan fashion by veterans, had a constituency that was happy. The complaint seemed to be with the federal VA, which is run by political appointees and non-veterans. Most of the employees in the federal VA are not veterans. So I don't understand this analysis, why it's important. If you just look at the facts, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, and the facts make their own gravy. The problem is, like talking to Sergeant Major this morning, his conversations with House members, you know, leading up to the vote, he said many of them he talked to, he didn't give me an exact number, but many of them he talked to were misinformed about the details of this. They, the people that had our votes, did not know, you know, what they were going to vote on.
No, when the Senate substitute bill was introduced by Senator Andrew Jones, literally over a 20-page bill, those senators had 6 minutes to review that bill before they were asked to vote on it. And it was a complete substitute bill. Now tell me, is that really democracy in action? Is that a constitutional republic with representative democracy? Is that how it's supposed to work? It's almost like the old adage when Nancy Pelosi said, well, we have to pass the bill before we find out what's in it. This was way too fast a process. It was shoved down the throats of both legislators and the veteran community without enough input. Nobody was opposed to saying, hey, if there's room for improvement, let's find ways to improve it. But the veteran community was not adequately consulted on this. It was an incredibly short fuse, pushed by the governor's office with questionable motives. And Senator Albritton knows that. He gave an interview in the fall where he said this is all about the governor getting even. And there's a history there.
Yeah, and so going forward here, because this is a maybe this the silver lining to this is it wakes up other veterans groups out there. Although I want to ask you about other veterans groups, too, because they have touted that there are veterans groups that agreed with this bill out there, you know, and they've used that to say, well, look, these veterans agree with the bill. It's just this, you know, this other group here that doesn't. How do you react to that, Admiral?
Okay, so there are nine organizations, veteran service organizations, represented on the State Board of Veterans Affairs. Five or six of those were opposed to the bill. The two large organizations that came out in favor, Veterans of Foreign Wars and American Legion, didn't poll their members. Yesterday, a member of the State Board of Veterans Affairs, Matt Gaff, who represents American Legion, gave interviews, and his quotes are in 1819 News Today, and I think AL.com did a story as well, where he said he was never polled. And he is the American Legion's representative on the State Board of Veterans Affairs. Post commanders have said they were never asked. Members were never polled. It's all over social media. A lot of the members of those organizations were not happy with it. And look, everybody has their opinions on it. And I think there should have been a legitimate discussion and polling and a public debate about it. But it happened so rapidly. And frankly, so many pressures were put on those organizations and legislators by the governor's office. It happened in haphazard, way too quick fashion. There was not a public debate. And let's contrast that last year. In reasonable fashion, there were questions asked about the Alabama Department of Public Health. All of the actions that happened during COVID, there were questions about, does the state health officer have too much power to declare emergencies? Did we learn that, look, we disrupted people's lives because there was not enough political influence over that process? Should that department and the state health officer be a political appointee? That debate went on for a long time with a lot of input. Opinions were solicited. And in the end, they compromised and said, you know what? They should remain an independent agency. The state health officer should not be a complete political appointee. There should be kind of a hybrid, where it's a mixture of political influence and that community, the medical community's influence, but it remained an independent agency. They tweaked the board a little bit based on that compromise and those lengthy discussions. That didn't happen here. There was no compromise. There was no lengthy discussion. In the beginning, that bill was introduced on a Tuesday, went to committee the next morning, and then they tried to shove it through a Senate floor vote the next day. Everybody I've talked to has said, I've never seen that happen before. It's just the process on this was so quick and incomplete because there's a lot of dissatisfied people out there, including about five or six veteran service organizations that have said, we weren't even included in the discussion at all on this.
Wow. As you look to what's next, organization here, I don't know what can be undone or what can be mitigated here. What's y'all's thoughts on this? I know that Sergeant Major talked about a political action committee out there.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. I've heard that through the grapevine. This session, they're going to move on to other things. The chances of
it. But can it be undone, I guess, Admiral? Can it be?
Sure, anything. I mean, I don't advertise this widely. I'm an attorney. I practiced law for 16 years. I worked in federal government, state, and local government. You can repeal any law. It's a legislative process. That's always a possibility. We repeal laws all the time. My gosh.
Sure.
Repealed prohibition in this country.
But we don't repeal nearly the number we put in.
ratio is really skewed. We have a tendency to grow government. We tend to grow government and laws and regulations without repealing a lot of them. I'm kind of stymied with this, that Republicans who are supposed to be in favor of smaller government are the ones in favor of saying, oh, we need to expand government services for veterans. Well, I've heard nothing specific. What services are not being taken care of that needed to be expanded at the government level? Nobody's explained that. I just hear we need to improve services for veterans. Okay, what? Tell me. You know, hope is not a plan. Tell me a specific plan to expand services for veterans.
No, there's just a lot of talk about the veterans and rah, rah, rah. And then when it gets down to the meat of it, we see where this goes.
Yep.
Yeah. Admiral, I appreciate your time. Have you join us again coming up in the near future. Hopefully you'll be able to come on with me again.
And there'll probably be some more news here soon, Sean.
I'm standing by for that for sure. Admiral Kent Davis, thanks for your time. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. We will get your calls and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile on this Friday. Looking at this this announcement, pretty cool. This is going to be coming up on Sunday, the grand opening of Mobile County's Bayfront Park. I know Commissioner DeWitt on the show talking with me about this park reopening, all the improvements done there. Well, you get to see it in person for yourself coming up on Sunday. And I tell you what, if it tracks anything like when Chickasabog reopened, I'm trying to think of how many weeks ago that was. It was like a rainy day. It wasn't even, and there were hundreds of people showing up there. So I imagine folks have been, and I love Bayfront Park even before they did the renovations. But I mean, you're going to Dolphin Island. You're going to pass it there. All these new improvements done. You can see them starting on Sunday with the grand opening. Once again, this is going to be from 2 to 4 o'clock. So after church or whatever, you can get there from 2 to 4 o'clock. Mobile County's Bayfront Park grand opening. Good stuff. Let me grab some text here as well. Plus, Leanna, let me know an accident. Let's see. This is, accident involving motorcycle, I-65 northbound at airport, which is right by our studios there. So hopefully people are okay. Anytime you hear an accident with a motorcycle, it makes me fear the worst there. All right. Fire Dog says, I'll give the state $100 to build new prisons. Can we get a GoFundMe page or something? Maybe we can charge and have the Navy depth charge those sharks, as I proposed last week. Step right up, press the button, depth charge a shark. All proceeds go towards building prisons to house the jackasses that shoot children. There you go. I'm on board. You said that bill's still floating around up there, right? The shark warning bill. And if we have time next hour, if y'all hadn't heard it, I mean, I understand the vibe behind it, but I mean, it's dumb policy. It's like headline sense, but paragraph 2, you lose me in this bill where they're going to have like a shark warning system on the coast. I mean, come on. If the shark shows up in your bathtub, that's a news story. If the shark shows up, you know, you're like, hey, man, I left the house earlier and I showed back up. There's a shark in the parlor. News story. But sharks in the Gulf, that's, oh, well. Cool. So Jerry says, hey, good afternoon, my friend. I'm happy to hear you about hearing about you giving away the EPIRB at the boat show. It's a great idea. And I have to say, Jerry, that's also the genius of the people with the Mobile Boat Show as well. We're working with them. He said, I hope you continue talking to your friends in the legislature about the tax exemption on all marine safety equipment. There's one in particular. I have talked to more than one, Jerry, but there's one in particular that I'm leaning on. I was told, I have not seen anything. So let me just say this, what I was told this, that there was some legislation being drafted to propose that what Jerry's talking about. He came up with this idea a while ago and said, hey, you know, we have severe weather preparedness, tax holiday. We have the school supply tax holiday, all this stuff. Why not marine safety equipment having some kind of tax holiday on it, but year round, like you do with like hearing aids, right? We've talked about that, the removing the sales tax on those. Well, what about marine safety equipment? I think it's a great idea. And yes, it has. People that go to Montgomery have heard of it. All right, Jerry, and there may be something coming. I just don't want to put myself on the chopping block because I am not in control of that. All right, this texter says, I am so glad that we have a supermajority of Republicans in the state of Alabama. This is what you get when you have a one-party state. This was a complete softball interview. You sound like you're interviewing the mayor. Oh, so there you go. You need to stop letting your guests completely BS you without you actually asking a follow-up question. Here's what I like is, first of all, really? And last sentence here, if you can't do it better, find someone else to do it. Why not? How about you, jackass? Well, how about you do it better? You know, there's something that you don't realize if you're going to, like this idea that you're going to hot take everybody and be a jerk. Well, if you did that, then you couldn't get people to come on the air with you. Now, I politely push back and ask questions from all these folks. But if you just want me to go yelling at a microphone and acting like a fool, then maybe you don't have the right show. It's okay. We got 56 hours a week of shows right here on FM Talk 106.5. I only do 10 of those hours. Be right back.